This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
You just heard from Fontaine DC 2018 release, Boys in the Better Land. That was the Darklands version. And welcome, everyone. You are listening to Uprise with your hosts, Koshin.
And Zan. I did that backwards.
Just felt right to introduce you.
It's okay. I'll be Zan for this episode.
And I'm Koshin. And today we're going to be going over 25 minutes of good news stories.
It's nothing. It's been a good week. If you are... I don't know, if you're a bad person, I guess. No, mostly bad news again, but got some good stuff in there.
Where should we begin? There's a whole soup of stuff to discuss.
Really good question. I defer to the Google document, I reckon. Let's start at the top of that, work our way down.
Well, the first thing is, it started as a good news story. I feel like the more research I've done into it, as usual, it's become a bad news story.
Mm.
But the much talked about arrest of Ben Robert Smith, which has been reported on hugely.
Yeah, it's interesting that it took this long, considering the defamation case that kind of showed in court that, you know, if he was ever accused of war crimes, that the findings would likely not go in his favor. So it seems like there's been enough evidence floating around in prosecutors' offices for a long time that they could have laid these charges a while ago, but better late than never, I guess.
Part of me wonders if they want the talking about it being like a dramatic airport arrest makes me feel like they wanted to wait so it could be as dramatic as possible so that people could feel special by being like running through the airport arresting this man.
Yeah. The airport, it was not a dramatic arrest. The video is just him. They just walked him off. I mean, they had no handcuffs, really no stress. I've seen shoplifters be treated a lot harsher than someone who has allegedly committed quite grievous crimes. You would think that they would, I don't know, be at least go through the theater of putting handcuffs on him, but no, they just they let him walk himself to the car.
Yeah, I guess the media has done that for them. I feel like I've seen two different sources talk about it as being a highly dramatic and highly high profile arrest involving an airport incident, which I feel like the media would love.
Yeah. Yeah, they would have loved, they should have chased him a bit.
I think another thing I found interesting was almost every article has talked about him as being highly decorated, which just feels like there's jewelry hanging all over him, like he's a Christmas tree.
Yeah, well, I do think you should wear your medals all day, every day. I mean, if I had some medals, I'd wear them every day. I think it'd be a bit of fun. Why not? I saw, went to the Queen Victoria Market this week. They had a Turkish festival on. They had some Turkish stalls. And there was a guy walking around with all of his medals from Turkey and pins with a lot of Turkish nationalist emblems all around him. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, people should just, if you had medals, you should wear them. You should show them off.
Yeah, you know? I think I've got a... Sport co-captain primary school medal that is probably my last medal that I received.
Yeah. They should make that pinnable, so like pin on your chest, you know. They put the ribbons on them. It's not good for demonstrating them. But yeah, he is the most decorated Australian soldier alive today. They really you know, they really gave him every award they could think of. And then he got an award from King Charles as well after the defamation case concluded. So after it was found in court that, you know, it's credibly, you know, the accusations have a lot of strength to them that he likely committed these war crimes, allegedly, I have to say allegedly, they still gave him another award after that. So they love giving this guy awards. So it'll be interesting to see how this concludes. If he does end up getting the life in prison that these charges carry, or if he's given some kind of nice little way out, some community service.
And what happens to his medals?
What does happen to his medals? I mean, yeah, they can be stripped. Like, I don't see why they haven't, you know, if they seem very concerned about the reputation of the Australian Defence Force, you would think that letting him keep the medals doesn't make them look very good. Yeah.
Reminds me of Donald Trump getting outraged, not winning the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, yeah.
Characters that don't really seem to be involved in peace at all, still wanting those shiny badges.
Him getting a peace prize from the FIFA, the FIFA Association, I think was one of the most incredible moments of his presidency. That was phenomenal. They should, every organization should just come up with their own peace prize and just start handing them out. Why not?
Maybe we can do that.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, if you want to get the Uprise Radio Peace Prize, let us know. Nominate someone. Email us in a nomination and we'll consider them. And at the end of the year, we'll give out the Uprise Radio Peace Prize. You heard it here first.
I guess the reporting on Ben Robert Smith at first, while it's good to see that this is moving after being so stagnant for so long, it's been pretty shocking to see how many people have come out kind of just blatantly in support of him, saying that it's humiliating him, that it's hard on him, it's hard on soldiers, and there's been consistently just so little talk about not just him and the war crimes being investigated, but all the other deaths involved in Australia's role in Afghanistan.
Yeah. No, I mean, the fact that this is like, people are calling it a culture war, event, like that it's just being talked into, like, it turned into a partisan position on where you stand on whether or not we should punish war crimes in this country, I think really reveals how, like, the level of discourse that we're at in Australia, where things are just, everything is permissible, basically, as long as it's focused towards our perceived enemies. You should defend war criminals, according to a lot of people in our political establishment. And that's really, I mean, it's gross, but it's revealing, I think, of where we're at and where some of the people who are making decisions in Canberra are at. It's been crazy to see. It's been wild.
Especially if they're going on holiday.
Yeah.
That seems to be something that people are particularly outraged at, is that he was about to go on a holiday.
Yeah. I think he spends a lot of time in Bali. I think he spends a huge amount of time in Southeast Asia, which is probably is him. I don't know. Maybe it's easy to avoid federal police there. I don't know. That's speculation. I'm really making sure I'm hitting that allegedly.
We can just have a button that we slap.
There's a process through court. We do have to wait to see what is determined, but these are the allegations.
I think what is important to highlight in all of this is that while Ben Robert Smith is one individual being investigated, that this is part of a much wider story of Australia's role and complicity in the war in Afghanistan and the thousands of soldiers that were there and the billions of dollars that were spent and the fact that he did not operate in isolation or he is part of a system and a structure that has informed, I think, the way that this has all played out and that we're just kind of focusing on one particular person.
And a structure that has gone unpunished. I mean, this is not going to become a kind of a deep dive look into, what is the role of our military abroad? What are the actions from the top down? It seems very clear that this is an attempt to kind of, find individual actors who committed crimes and punish them without a holistic, systemic approach that would, actually kind of bring a level of justice that is required. We occupied a country for a very long time and we did terrible things. Like, the whole process was a crime. The whole thing was a crime, morally at least. And there's not going to be a retribution with that. I think a lot of people are going to be very satisfied with, just finding one or a couple of people and saying these were the bad eggs in an otherwise good operation. And they've been punished and we can all just move forward. And that is not satisfying, I think.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in looking into this a bit more, it was interesting seeing how it kind of just expands into what you choose to look at. There's the kind of accounts of five war crimes related to allegedly Ben Robert Smith, but then there's also the I think the Brereton report that noted 39 Afghanistan civilians being killed, and even just investigating those 39 is so insufficient because there's just thousands of people impacted, and that's not going to be investigated.
Did you get a chance to look at the Brereton report?
I did not have the moral backbone.
I remember when it came out, downloading it and thinking, you know, here we go. It's exciting. They're revealing, you know, this information. And it was every page was basically entirely black.
Redacted.
It was like the most redacted document I have ever seen in my life. I don't even know why they bothered to release it. They should have just said, you know, just even the title's redacted. It was so comical that they even released it. It's really not worth your time trying to read.
I guess that's the thing with like government endorsed and sponsored initiatives is that they're probably not going to investigate themselves.
Yeah.
So then it takes more independent journalism, which has been done in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Anthony Lowenstein has reported a lot on Afghanistan and has a book and a doco, which is well worth watching.
I do want to say something. I don't know how to articulate. I tried to explain this to Zan off air. I'm going to try and explain this on air.
I
just think that we have to take a look at the actions like this, at individuals like this. They're not born into this world, you know, violent people. They're turned into these killing machines through the training of the military. The actual apparatus itself removes the humanity of these people in the process of turning them into functional soldiers. And that itself is violent. That itself is a violent act. And until we can actually grapple with, you know, the fact that every country on earth has these military institutions that are dehumanizing their own citizens and turning them into killing machines, we're not gonna, you know, reach any kind of
fully automated luxury communism.
Yeah, yes, the fully automated luxury communism that we're all obviously trying to get to. That's the end goal, and we're not going to get there until we can grapple with that fact.
I think it also kind of relates to what I've been seeing in the whole, like, I saw a word today that I'd never seen before called memetic warfare.
Oh, I love a little, yeah,
meme
love
warfare.
Memetic.
Yeah. But just the way that warfare and war crimes and genocide is being kind of campaigned through memes at an international level, and the way that, I mean, this is not new. It's been, I feel like propaganda has been happening way before the internet even happened. It was just like in a poster format. But seeing the way that nations are kind of garnering support or kind of sanitizing or softening war crimes through memes is terrifying. And and also confusing, because there's an element of humor in it, which makes it unsettling.
Yeah, definitely. It's new at the state level. I mean, it's been happening online for a while, but it's definitely new that countries are really engaging with that as conceptually as a way to kind of promote ideas and communicate through this blend of violence and humor, which previously was basically restricted to the domain of terrorism, like really was just used by terrorists and using the internet as propaganda. But now is just being used by countries. And it has the same slimy, gross feeling. I don't like seeing the White House putting out snappy videos of them, you know, doing Call of Duty videos interspliced with them bombing actual targets. It doesn't make me feel settled.
And I know, like, Iran's embassies all across the world, there's been, like, multiple different countries that have been posting memes. I will say the humor in those memes feels of a different level to Trump's, which feel incomprehensible and at least at the point in which he was posting every half hour between the hours of, what, 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. with his God Doctor pic, felt more just like a plea for help in a state of distress.
He doesn't seem to be... He doesn't seem to be on stable ground right now. He doesn't seem like he's doing great.
You'd think there'd also be a posting limit, like a spam auto blocker that sees you've posted six times in the past few hours. Well, you should maybe go have a cup of tea.
It's his website. I mean, he made his own social media, truth.com. He can, Truth Social. I mean, he's not going to block himself. He might, maybe other people have limiters, but he's, you know, his account's golden. He can do whatever he wants on there. it's something else. He's really the fact that he did that DoorDash video this week in the middle of, you know, an imminent global recession caused by his actions and his decision to go to war with Iran, and he decided to spend time getting McDonald's delivered to his house by a woman who should be retired but can't because she has to pay for medical bills in America, where, like, it is just, I don't even know what's going on anymore. It is such a deluge of information.
While, like, on a moral level, I despise it. I feel like there is this level of ADHD relatability, I feel, and, like, having the pressing thing you really need to be doing and instead micro-cleaning the inside of your closet for 7 hours. Yeah, and then Trump is just kind of doing that on a very global scale.
No, definitely. Yeah, it does feel like that. Yeah, super fixated on. It's like how he keeps talking about his ballroom that he's trying to build. He, like, will not drop that he's going to build a massive ballroom next to the White House. It's just, it's just focus on one project at a time, Donald. Write a to-do list, prioritize top to bottom, and tick them off as you go.
Yeah, we're now providing a political help.
It's so out of control over there. It's,
Another thing in the news that I wanted to mention was the 21-hour of intensive talks, which I found I had so many questions over. Did they have breaks? Did they have nap rooms? Was there catering? Were they allowed to smoke inside? How many non-men were at the table?
So good questions. I would think in Pakistan, I think you can smoke inside. I would think that they would be smoking inside. I know that they were never in the same room, the Iranian delegation and the American delegation. They had mediators who kind of shuffle between the rooms to talk to each party. And I know that J.D. Vance was apparently always on the phone because he was calling. He called Donald Trump and he called Netanyahu reportedly, which really is not... meant to be negotiating. You're meant to be the negotiating party. It's not exactly, it's not showing a lot of confidence that you're calling into your higher ups to say, okay, what do we want to do here? What's happening?
Also, just the, I'm just trying to imagine the amount of he said, she said, that he said, that she said, that he said.
Yeah.
It's going to make for some really good international policy.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, these negotiations, anytime they're happening, I just think there must be such a mess. Just get in the same room. Just talk to each other directly. Like, it seems like these mediations don't work very well.
I also think asking anyone to mediate for 21 hours straight feels like really... wild.
I did see reporting that apparently China sent a delegation as well, even though they weren't directly involved, which I gave me a, like, that felt very cool in a way, that there's this big meeting going on and then they look out the window and they see some Chinese flags on some cars and they go, oh, I guess China's got diplomats here as well. Like, they're not even really, no one invited them. They just showed up and they were like, you know, we're just going to get involved.
I feel like China has repeatedly offered very diplomatic facilitation energy throughout this, though. So I kind of understand them being like, no, we'll continue showing up.
Really, the only, they're the ones in this who are, you know, dealing with, I mean, they've got good relationships with the Gulf and with Iran. They are a real, like, let's all prosper together type energy at the moment. Versus,
also on the meme game.
Yeah, China's on the meme game. China's memes are funny, though. China's empowered its diplomats to post on Twitter with full authority, and it works for them. It's a good strategy. They've got some great soldiers on the internet. I don't know how else to describe that. we should talk about the Military Religious Freedom Foundation as well, which is a story that I have been wanting to talk about for a while because it's really wild. The whistleblowing about the religious influence in the American military right now from Christian, sort of Christian nationalist, I guess, higher ups who are really kind of sending a message downstream that this is a religious war against Iran and that Trump is empowered by God, I guess. He's on a divine mission to, what's the term, to light the fire in Persia or something.
So the complaint that was filed, I think, to the Military Religious Freedom Foundation was around a commander telling people in the unit that this was all part of, I quote, all part of God's divine plan. And he said that President Trump has been anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and mark his return to Earth.
So normal stuff. Normal good stuff. Yep. And then they turn around with a straight face and say that Iran is a religiously fanatic country that can't be dealt with seriously.
Holy war has really taken a turn of phrase now.
Yeah.
And then for Trump to go and make a post of himself seemingly looking like Jesus Christ and then to say, I thought it was a doctor.
Yeah, that's just not even, they're not even trying anymore with the lies. They're just sort of saying stuff.
Like, what doctor looks like that?
It just doesn't even make sense. It's not even worth engaging. Like, it's obviously trying to be Jesus. But yeah.
And the, I help people, I make people better. Like, yeah. Donald Trump, if your next path is medicine, like, go off.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Yeah.
Terrifying.
The beef with, the fact that he's beefing with the Pope now, and, you know, all of his Catholic converts like J.D. Vance trying to explain to the Pope that they're wrong. If you're a Catholic, I'm sorry, you have to submit to the authority of the Pope. It's not negotiable. You're not allowed to explain to the Pope that he has the wrong reading of the Bible. It's out of this world.
And some pretty strong imagery.
Yeah. The big thing that I'm, really, if the Pope excommunicates J.D. Vance and sends him out of the Catholic Church, I will
make
go
an
to
award.
Church every week. I will be there. I will be in the Catholic Church 100%. That will be an incredible moment. Someone's got to get excommunicated. It would be so phenomenal.
Yeah,
bring
we'll pray.
Back. Yeah, we'll pray for that. We'll pray for the excommunication of J.D. Vance. From the Catholic Church. This is a Catholic podcast now.
On that note, I want to end with some Sade.
Oh, yeah. Great.
The song is called Why Can't We Live Together? And it speaks for itself.
Beautiful. Beautiful. We will see you all in a couple of weeks for a very special episode. We are going to talk about Thomas Sankara and Burkina Faso and Ibrahim Traore, the current president of Burkina Faso. We're going to tell you all exactly what to think about Ibrahim Traore. We're going to tell you all about all the great things Thomas Sankara did. It's going to be a great episode, so tune in for that one.
And hang on till then in this crazy world.
Yeah. Start buying beans. Start stocking up on non-perishable foods.
Oh, yes. We're going to change our episode to, this is not financial advice, but I have recently withdrawn all of my stocks.
Yeah, that's a joke.
I don't have any stocks.
For legal reasons. But if anyone is telling you that we're not about to enter the biggest global recession this side of the 15th century, they are lying to you. It is, bad things are happening, but it's all gonna be fine because we have each other and we have community and we all love each other. Okay,
and we'll see you
all. And we have Sade. We'll see you all soon. Bye bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.